You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Alan Seiler.
What's up, Discovery fans?
And Veronica Daschle.
Hi.
And you want to kick us off today with a spoiler warning, Veronica?
Black alert.
Okay. The sport draft sounds more like Curly from the Three Stooges, though. It goes,
I tried.
So or Dr. Zoidberg.
Yes, right. We're in spoiler territory again after a while.
Yes.
Talking finally. About the fifth season premiere, the first two episodes this week of Star Trek Discovery Season 5.
Yay.
Woohoo.
The Red Directive and Under the Twin Moons.
Yeah, baby.
They were really good.
And it was a heck of a premiere today.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they kicked it off in a big way.
Yeah, we already have a few comments. First off, our buddy Wayne says, first, hey, y'all. And no, the command staff going on a hazardous away mission. Come on.
Yeah, that's speaking how they of that, do it. It's the TOS era.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. They're a 23rd century crew. That's how you do it. Captain and first officer, dangerous mission.
Right on. And speaking of that, our own Keith is on an away mission.
That's right.
A dangerous one at that.
Right. Yep. Keith is viewing the eclipse from Texas. This
yeah.
week. So, you know, good luck out there, Keith, and don't stare at the sun.
Matt Sweatman is joining us and says that our presentation is nifty.
Awesome.
Thank you, I'll take Matt. We appreciate it. And Elaine Sweatman says, hi.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, Elaine. Thank you all for watching. Everybody mm-hmm. who's watching, just so you know, this is a live show. So anytime that you chime in, just like you just saw, we will get your comments and or questions and we'll put them up on screen and we will address them as quickly as we can.
That's right.
So feel free to leave comments and questions and join the conversation.
Yeah. And yeah, they kicked it off with a bang this week.
Yeah, I really like how they started it with like this big action sequence of, oh my gosh, why is she doing this? And then it jumps back the 4 or 2 hours and mm-hmm. it's up to it. But they started with the boom, big action sequence.
Oh yeah.
Get your head to wake you up.
Ride on the back of a starship at warp.
Yeah.
Right. And waking up was needed because I had to get up an hour earlier than I normally do in order to watch one of the two episodes and then watch the second one when I got home from work. But Chuck, you didn't have to do that this week.
No, I'm off this week. So Veronica didn't have to worry about me waking her up at 3 a.m. to watch 2 episodes before I go to work.
Thank goodness. And luckily I work from home on Thursday, so it works out.
Right.
Right on. So, Charles, what did you think of it?
I thought it was fun. I mean, they're making an attempt to lighten the show up this season. It's more whiz bang. It has a lighter tone. They're more quippy. You know, she's like bouncing off things in space, like, oh, that's going to leave a mark, that kind of stuff. Whereas last season was pretty heavy. And season three was pretty heavy, too. Where every conversation is like, it's the end of the world, that fits the tone of the season. But I like that they're shifting the tone up this year. And it's more like an Indiana Jones adventure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, let me get a couple of new comments. Elaine says, I was really impressed with seeing the starships in a chase scene.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Our good buddy Wayne says, even 23rd century, 900 years removed.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. That's where they came from. So I think
that
fits them. And just like they don't develop their bridge crew, they barely get speaking lines. That's a 23rd century crew.
Right on. And Matt says, it's Star Trek, the key to time. You stole my joke. Gosh darn it. I was going to say, welcome to Doctor Who, the key to time.
Right. Yeah, but I think it's a good setup for the show. And I mean, did anyone expect them to be doing a sequel to The Chase?
Okay.
No.
Let me just I got to put this in here, okay? So The Chase first aired It was released in syndication April 26th, 1993. That was 31 years ago. In my area, it probably aired at 7 p.m. So 31 years ago, on April 26, 1993, at 8 p.m., I said, and I quote, "What a waste of a concept. What a big, epic idea that's wasted on doing it in one single episode. This should have been a movie, if not a story arc for a season." By golly, I feel justified.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel seen, as the kids.
Well, it's one of those things in Star Trek that they just kind of drop that has huge implications for the universe. Yes. And then they just never mention it again.
Correct.
For 30 years.
Right.
And I've said before over the last year that, you know, I'm getting a little bit weary of everything being a sequel to an old Star Trek episode. But if you're going to do that, The Chase is a perfect one to pull.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
I mean, the progenitors were as close as there are to probably gods in the Star Trek universe. They created life, like humanoid life in the universe, and seeded it. Well, they didn't create it, but they seeded it throughout. You know, they're where we come from. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it's something that the characters can be introspective about where life came from. Why are we here? We're actually looking for answers.
Right. What's our purpose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved the opening of episode two, where Michael is like, you know, my purpose has always been the mission, you know, and now she's questioning why are any of us here? Why is all this stuff here? Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a great Star Trek-y thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's very Star Trek-y to say that we're all not that different. We're all related in
right.
some way. We're, you know, we're all in some respects, you could say the same people. You know, which I think speaks very much to Star Trek, that it's about finding that the understanding and the commonalities between us.
Right. And the implications that brings with it, which is something that I'm really hoping that they explore this season.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, because in the I guess it was in episode two, they mentioned that, you know, all the stuff that's going on with the Breen and Cardassians and Captain Weird. Huh?
Tholians. It was the Breen and the Tholians that they name dropped.
Oh, well, I know the Cardassians got mentioned somewhere in these two. And then Captain Weird Ears was like, war is always a possibility. I have no idea what his name is, but he's Captain Weird Ears to me. So, you know, this is going to have ramifications for everything. And I'm really, really excited to see where they're going with all this.
Oh, yeah. And I love that it started off with a 24th century Romulan ship, which looks like a 24th century Romulan ship, at least from the outside. And like one of those dudes who was there in the chase. Now, I don't know if the actor was the same actor or not.
I meant to look that up, and I didn't notice if he is or not.
Matt, you have an assignment.
I looked up the actor who was in this episode, and he was never credited for Next Generation, but I don't know that the fourth guy back in the Romulan party was credited on the Next Generation 31 years ago or not.
Right.
So,
right.
He looks like him, and I buy it.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Matt chimes in by saying, as soon as they said the ship was from 800 years ago, I did the math and said to Elaine that I bet they're going to reference something from the Next Generation era.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that era of series. And then we are also joined tonight by Sci-Fi Queens.
Hi. Welcome back.
Hello. How is everybody? Yeah. And Elaine says, Captain Weird Ears' name is Rayner. I don't care. He's still Captain Weird Ears to me.
They said in an interview that he's supposed to be from that species from the Armageddon game from DS9, the guys with the crazy hair who they faked the death of O'Brien and Bashir, which is a great episode. But he doesn't have the crazy hair, but he does have their ears. So hopefully that'll be relevant. Hopefully that'll be set on screen at some point.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think that those people were in the Federation at the time. Mm-hmm. Clearly, either they are now, or at least this guy is, where they have hairdressers.
That is true. There are definitely hairdressers in the Federation. We have confirmed that.
Yeah.
We have met one of them. She's lovely.
Right.
Anyway, so specific points. And also, people who are watching, chime in and let us know if you have... if you want to like raise a specific, Elaine just commented by saying Moxie. Heck yeah.
Yay.
And let us know what you thought of the episodes. And if you have any particular favorite part, or if you have a question about one of the characters or anything, just let us know.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part was the synth.
Oh, yeah.
The not Data.
Fred.
Yeah. Fred. I was really hoping when they like killed him that they'd be able to like revive him. I mean, I know they kind of sort of did that. And then he'd be a permanent part of the crew. That would have been awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really liked Fred.
Fred was great.
He's kind of a jerk. Yeah, well, he immediately betrayed them.
These people don't know what this is. I'm going to take it.
I'm going to steal this from you.
He can be reprogrammed.
Yeah, no, I thought it was cool to see a Soong-type android.
Yes.
Now, they didn't go into... I didn't see him bleed or anything. There were also synths, like the flesh and blood synths in Picard, that also had the gold skin and eyes on that planet. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how Data-like he is, but he definitely had the Data look.
Mm-hmm.
His speech was a little undata-ish.
Mm.
He used more colloquialisms had a different like sort of personality, I think. Yeah. But still, it was cool to see.
But he also, I mean, he talked about being around for like 600 something years.
Yes.
So, I mean, he presumably over time could have developed, mm-hmm. you know? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Interesting character. I wish he wouldn't have gotten wasted so quick. I would like to see more of him.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll run into another one. Who knows?
Yeah. My favorite part, you've listened to the podcast over the last year, you've heard me complaining on both Strange New Worlds and Picard about the lack of planetary adventures. And I was thrilled this week. We got planetary adventure after planetary adventure, and they looked fantastic. I love that desert planet.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
That jungle looked fantastic. I don't know if they built that jungle or if they went on location to film that, but it looked great.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be location because it just looks like a Stargate episode. They probably used one of those Stargate forests.
Yeah, more jungly plants though than Stargate usually. Stargate was a lot of like pine trees. But even like the distances, like on that planet, like it had the look of like a like the TOS map paintings and stuff with the sky and the castles and everything. I thought it looked great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really like the booby traps and everything.
Yes, yes. And as you say, that the desert planet, it first of all, it put me a little bit too much in mind of the Next Gen movie where Nemesis. They had the dune buggy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, still, and you know, it's Discovery. So there's still long conversations being had over very loud and very fast motorcycles. And they're in an immediate situation, yet they're going to discuss their plan and they're
don't call me when I'm in a dirt bike chase. I'm not gonna be able to have a conversation with you. Jumping over dunes and dodging phaser fire.
Right. Anyway, but I thought all that was really great, and I love I just love them getting off the ship.
Absolutely. And I mean, and I get why these shows tend to be very ship based because they spend a lot of money on the ship.
Oh, sure.
And you've got the standing set there. But now with the volume, and like I said, I think they went on location as well. It looked like it to me. If not, they're getting real good at shooting in the studio because it looked, both plans I thought looked fantastic.
Yeah. I think that a lot of that, I mean, was obviously practical. And I'm sure that forest stuff was location. It just, it looked much more dirty. You would get in the studio.
True. And we did watch on the Ready Room. They didn't go into a lot about the location shooting, but they did have they showed how they filmed Saru running real fast. And they have like this thing they drag behind a truck and he runs on the thing while the truck's pulling it to make him look like he's going super fast.
Yeah.
And that was outside, obviously. So they were somewhere.
Matt has done some research for us, and he says the actor who played the Romulan commander in the chase passed away in 2020. So that was not him.
He wasn't the commander. They sort of focused on the guy like three guys back from the
commander. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Who I don't think was credited, actually. I might be wrong about that, but at least, I mean, I looked at the wiki page for it, and there's not a credit for him there.
Okay. Well, so maybe it's the same guy, and if not, it doesn't matter because, I mean
it's convincing enough. It's not like some of the replacements that they did in the early seasons of Picard, which were not convincing.
No. That is true. Even in the video, he looked like a TNG-ish era, you know, of that 24th, 25th century Romulan.
Yes. looked and sounded, because he had that delivery, the way that they always spoke in Next Gen. Yes.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Yeah. And I think that's a great leaping off point. Now, hopefully it won't just be the chase again, where you go through 10 episodes this time to find out there's no great technology at the end. It's another message, you know, like that was sort of the plot of the chase. We don't want to, like, I hope there's something more substantive at the end of this. I guess what they're saying here is that there's a great technology they had in order to seize the galaxy. And, you know, that would, I would presume, have kind of like the Genesis device, like you could use it for good or use it for bad.
Sure.
But hopefully there'll be more, something more in depth than another Salome Gems recording at the end.
Right. Right. Because the funniest part about that episode, the chase, was them kind of all walking away at the end, like, that's it. And they just sort of like saunter away because they're all disappointed. So, yeah. But OK, so we're searching for, if we're following the key to time pattern, we have five keys. Or five segments of this key, we found one in episode 2. Maybe we'll find one each episode going forward, which will lead us up to the end of episode 6, which leaves us 2 episodes to wrap up the ramifications of this thing and what it can mean and what it can do and how it affects all the people that are involved in this thing.
Right. And like I said, hopefully add some big questions to ponder and big decisions to make, and not just you're falling to the end of the breadcrumbs and then this show's over, you know?
Yeah.
But I liked too that they delved, like the booby trap planet, that with the temples was the Promelians from the episode Booby Trap, where their ship was caught in the ancient, like the Promelian battle cruiser was caught in the ancient booby trap. And the episodes already have pretty epic scope. You've got these progenitors that go back, I don't know, millions or billions of years. You've got the Promelians that are thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And I really liked the booby trap planet with the things chasing them around and everything.
Which, you know, I understand, you know, we get the reference to where these things came from, but at the same time, the little booby traps that are like the drones that are chasing them around was 100% TNG season 1
Arsenal of Freedom.
Arsenal of Freedom.
Yes, I had that same thought. They look very much like Arsenal of Freedom,
which I don't mind at all.
No, I thought that
like. Yeah, I mean it's a visual callback. I mean probably unintentional, but at the same time, it kind of means something to those of us who know.
Oh, yeah,
and it's not necessary knowledge if you're just watching it. It's just things that are shooting at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's all it has to be.
Yeah. And the drones can have more capabilities now than they could have in 1987.
Right. Definitely. Oh,
speaking of things shooting at things, I really liked Saru's little pew pew with his spikes.
Yeah. We haven't seen those in a while.
Yeah.
I didn't know they could blow up drones. Like they're.
Thank you.
Pretty powerful with those things.
I mean, they're firing phasers at him, and that's not blowing him up, but the spikes will do it.
Right.
The spikes had better aim.
Okay. Aim? That could be. Matt says, as long as David Cronenberg isn't revealed to be the Black Guardian at the end.
I would be kind of happy if he was revealed to be anybody, because it's been third season with this guy, and I have no idea what even his job is.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
He's just the mysterious guy who hangs around and barks orders at people.
Even right. Animals. He's just there to mumble at people.
Right.
And Elaine says, I said the same thing. I just couldn't remember the name. I was calling it one in the where Crusher fell in the hole. And I'm just going to like pause our discussion for a second here, because I want to say that I missed being on our episode where Matt and Elaine came on to talk about their rewatch of season 1. And one of the things, had I been on the show, one of the things I wanted to talk about was Arsenal of Freedom, because I love that episode so much.
Yeah. Some of the early TNGs are fun. And I like that they're calling back to these like really good TNG and DS9 episodes to tell their story. I mean, because for one, they're just nice to go back and rewatch. It gives you kind of an excuse to do that. But right. I like that they're pulling more of the lore. And it's something that, I mean, I've enjoyed that Discovery has been giving us new stuff. It's the one Star Trek show that's been consistently giving us new stuff for the past several years and not just callbacks.
Right.
But, I mean, they're entitled. They're a Star Trek series. They're entitled to use the lore if they use the lore. And like I said, I think the chase is a really great one to pull, because it's one of those things. Like, it has like galactic implications, and it never gets brought up again ever on the show. It's one of those dangling threads.
Right. Right. Okay. So
have a response for Wayne.
Wayne says, I thought it was cool that they could replicate weapons on the spot.
But I don't think they did. I think they had, because she was like running around without a weapon for a while. And so was Saru, because she had to put the two weapons in there for them to discharge. So they had to discharge and they just teleported them back to them after they had discharged.
Well, they have the technology now. They have like the smart programmable matter. Yes. And so it like it shoots out and becomes a gun. But they had this week, she like go gadget it into a phaser rifle, which I thought was kind of neat.
Then why were you running around without a gun?
Well, because he gave it to her. They're like programmable matter guns, I guess, that go into their uniform and then like come out when they need them to materialize into a gun.
But then
I don't think they have infinite guns.
But he materialized one in his hand after the other ones blew up in the head.
Did he? Okay, yeah. I don't remember that.
That's why I thought they teleported them.
Okay, well, maybe.
That was my logic.
Okay, that can't argue with you. Works. Second century. Sounds good to me. But I didn't think it was kind of cool when she was like, and now she has a phaser rifle. Now, if this happened on Strange New Worlds, I would be upset about it because it's not the 23rd century. But 32nd century, it's like magical technology anyway. So right.
Right.
Although, I did find it pretty goofy when they nosedive those two starships. Yes!
Thank you.
Because starships are not supposed to go into the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Discovery crash onto a planet before and be fine and just fly away at the end. But
the fact that they landed at that angle and then didn't fall.
Yeah, I'm going to pretend that they stopped real close to the ground and the shields were protecting them, and it's just the sand came up and it made me think that they just nosedived these two starships into the ground.
Right, right. I mean, we saw Deanna do that and we saw how that turned out.
Right. Yeah, we saw a few times on DS9 what happens when your starship hits the ground. Right. No, but O'Brien rips his pants. It's terrible. No one ripped their pants in this one.
Oh, dear Lord. Oh. Okay. Wayne says, reminds me of the movie Ultraviolet.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that one. But
I don't think I have either.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. We saw it in 3D and we have it in 3D. And it was that blonde girl and the guy, and they went around and they were like hopping between spaceships in one episode.
That was not Ultraviolet.
No?
No.
What was that?
You're thinking of a different movie.
What was that movie? I
will figure it out later.
Right.
But what do we think of Rainer?
Eh.
You didn't like him? I thought he had kind of a Lorca vibe to him. I thought he brought kind of that energy back to the show.
He did. That's what I thought, too. I was like, why does he look so much like Lorca with weird ears?
Yeah. No, I like the actor. I liked him on Battlestar Galactica. He played a Cylon. That's Callum Keith Rennie is his name. Cylons on BSG.
I saw the actor name and I thought, where do I know that name from?
But he's one of the 12.
I didn't get a chance to look it up, so...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I didn't think that he did anything bad enough to warrant a next day inquisition presided over by the president.
No.
Right. Like, he didn't bomb the country or something, you know?
Right. I thought that was a little extreme.
He made kind of a close call and then gave, like, he gave the bad guys the idea to start an avalanche. And for that, he's like brought before the board and the president herself sitting over his tribunal. I was like, jeez.
I don't know. That seemed a bit much.
Yes. Well, but they just need a scene. They need something for her to do. But it seems like the president would have a busy schedule. Like, the president doesn't have tomorrow clear to oversee a trial for something to happen today. Justice moves quick in the future.
Elaine tells us that she knows that guy from Californication, which I have never watched, so I would not have known him from there. And Wayne says, Mila Jovovich vehicle.
Right. That's Ultraviolet. It's a whole different movie from what Bronco was thinking of. Yeah. But yeah, I liked the character. I think it's kind of weird that she, again, Burnham ended up with a former captain as her first officer.
I know.
I don't know why that's the case, but... I mean, I like getting a little more of that, like, the Lorca attitude, like, jerk captain guy who just gets the job done. I think it'll be interesting now that the dynamic's going to be different because she's in command this time and she's not answering to him.
So is he half human, half whatever the other thing is, because he acts very human.
He does act very human. I mean, they haven't said even what he is on screen yet, much less what percentages. But I don't know. I mean, but also I don't know how long these cultures have been intermingling. And I mean, it's 1,000 years later almost, you know?
So yeah.
Who knows? He knows English curse words and nothing else.
No, that's the translator.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Good point.
Translated into English.
Yeah. Right. I liked him, though. I like the actor. So I think it'll be an interesting dynamic.
I think it will be, too. Mm-hmm. I think so. But I don't know. I just, you know, this one of the things that frustrates me about this show is that they load in so many characters, you know, and they're always constantly. And I didn't mind last year when we got added in President Rillick. Mm-hmm. And we already had Cronenberg's character and Captain Hot Daddy. And I mean, Admiral Hot Daddy. Sorry, I didn't mean to demote him, you know, because they're the Federation side. And I don't know. They just keep like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just feel like sometimes they just load too many characters in. And I don't know. It just, I don't know.
So would you have preferred to
I'm
see
being
that
grumpy.
XO position go to like a Detmer or Owo or somebody like that?
Yes. Not
necessarily. Well, sure. Of course, I always want that. But I don't think that would happen. But it could be. I don't know. Yeah. They were, you know, when they were having the conversation, who am I going to get to replace you? And Saru was like, you need someone like Book. I thought they are not going to put
Book
in that position.
What I was afraid of.
That's going to be one of my questions. Do you think
I would have flipped the table?
Book, do you think that's by the end of the season? Do you think Book is going to be the first officer?
No.
Oh my God.
I don't think so. Because
I mean, he's not in Starfleet and he's the captain's ex-boyfriend, but also working off of a sentence for a crime he committed last year. So other than those three things, do you think that he's a good candidate?
Right. No, man. I just...
It has been proven he will question Burnham, though.
That's true. That's true. I'm to the point where I'm kind of over some of these characters that I just don't see serve a purpose currently. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not going to say any specifics other than that, but there are a few that I just think we could be done with that and it won't affect the show at all if they're not there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they kind of had the same problem that they've had for several years on the show now, is that it was set up where all the characters were scientists on a ship that had to go to war. And then they're having to figure out maybe Tilly could be the first officer. Maybe Saru could be the captain and Burnham the first officer. Maybe vice versa. It's not built into the show the way usual Star Trek shows. That's built in. You know, you have a captain and a first officer and so forth, the chain of command. This show really wasn't set up that way from the start. And they've been weird about that for 3 years because of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. New comments. Elaine says, no, because Book just goes where the Federation tells him to go.
Well, I think he has to right now.
Yes.
I think he does, yes.
Yeah.
Matt says, does Book have to have a built-in conflict of interest every season?
Yes.
Apparently so. But I tell you what, there won't be one next season.
Unless he's on Starfleet Academy.
Oh, my God. What if he is? Holy smokes.
I like Book.
Nah, he's fine. Anyway, Wayne says, I thought it was Daniel Craig who played this Captain Weird Ears. See, that was what I was getting from him, too. I totally saw the Lorca attitude and everything. But when I first glanced, I was like, Daniel Craig? I know it's not. Anyway. All right.
So from Matt earlier, we skipped over.
Did we?
Yeah. At 8:23 p.m.
Oh, dear Lord. Look at that.
No pressure.
Did everyone see Captain Weird Ears being the new number one coming from a mile away? No, I did not.
I didn't see that coming from a mile away.
Matt, you are special and have foreknowledge that we do not possess.
I thought he was going to be a recurring sort of antagonist captain.
So did I.
And he'd be on his ship and they'd be both having to work together or working against each other, that sort of thing.
Right.
I didn't anticipate him getting demoted and then promoted to first officer.
I haven't been this mad at anyone in 930 years.
We're already at the halfway point of the show. We're already.
Oh my gosh. How can we already be that far in?
Do we want to go to a quick commercial break and then come back with some more thoughts about Star Trek Discovery season 5?
We can do that. Yeah. We're going to play a quick ad. Nobody leave. We got more to talk about right after this. Check out the Modern Musicology podcast, where each week we talk about things like
what makes a great drummer,
our favorite rock documentaries,
songs we love by artists we don't love,
our favorite concert memories,
songs that should have been singles,
and all of our favorite music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now.
Do not use Modern Musicology if you're allergic to it. Modern Musicology may produce itching, dizziness, vertigo, temporary blindness, or heart palpitations. Do not taunt Modern Musicology.
Ask your doctor about switching to Modern Musicology.
All right.
And we're back.
We're back.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the particular characters. Like, we have a full-time return of Tilly, it looks like. What do we think about Tilly coming back and her role in this story so far?
I'm excited to see Tilly again. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten what her character was like. But it's from what I recall, she's not changed a whole lot. And I especially liked her little champagne drunk scene. At first, I thought she was calling herself champagne, but then I realized it was because she drinks champagne.
Yeah, I don't think that she should drunk hack into military secrets. I think probably not a good idea.
No.
We're going to assume it was Synthahol, even though I know it isn't, because they said it was something specific, and she could just will off the effects like that. Well, we're just going to go with that.
No, she had a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, coffee doesn't work that quickly.
Well, you don't know how long she was working at it.
Yeah, I know, that's true.
I was glad that her hacking was like detected and they were there before she was done. Like, especially because she's from the past. I mean, I know she's been in this century now for a few years, but she shouldn't be able to just hack into Federation HQ that easily without getting busted. And she's really lucky.
They probably haven't changed their passwords in 900 years.
Yeah. So, and she's really lucky that Admiral Vance showed up and just gave her a free pass for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wayne says that he loves that commercial.
Hey, thank you, Wayne.
Which won't make any sense to people listening to this as a podcast, because it'll be a different ad in that slot, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And Matt says, I didn't realize how much I missed Tilly most of last season until today. Yeah. I've always loved Tilly from the very beginning, and I am always happy to see her back. And as we know, I mean, we always kind of figured this, but it got confirmed in that Variety article that came out a couple of weeks ago, that she is the one that's spinning off into this Starfleet Academy show, because it is 32nd century set. And, you know, that I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
that's good.
That'll be good.
And she referenced her little crash adventure with the cadets last year.
Yeah.
I like that that she's still actively doing that. And I do hope that she remains involved. I don't know how they would involve her every week.
Right.
With the current setup. Because I'm kind of hoping they don't go back to Federation HQ every week.
Right.
Like, Saru was talking about seeing Tarina more by being in this ambassador position. And I was like, you guys are going to Federation HQ at the end of every episode. So you can see her all the time now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you're
on
a Spore Drive ship. So what's your problem?
So are we going to be seeing less of Saru? Are we going to be seeing him just like every other episode? Or are we going to have a lot of scenes set in Starfleet headquarters with him and the president and the others? And
I don't know. I would like, if we're going to follow Saru, I would like to follow him dealing with these little, I mean, maybe something relevant to the plot is happening with these little smaller planets that he's supposed to be the ambassador to. And
yes,
he gets involved on the other side of it somehow. I think
I do want to see. Yeah, I do want to see him in his career. I do want to get at least some significant scenes of him doing his new job, settling in, being an ambassador, reaching out to these smaller planets. I really want that. I mean, I always want to follow that more than I do the Key to Time.
Right. Was anybody worried about Saru today?
Oh, God, yes.
Are they
going to kill him off?
They're leaning into like the Lethal Weapon type cliches. Like, it's my last mission. I'm retired on Friday. I'm getting married.
Yes.
I'm getting too old for this.
Yes. And then he got hit and he kept leaning into that. Like, oh, well, you know, and like, look, I was like, oh my God, he's going to drop dead any second. I can't handle that. I can't take it. And well, on his engagement day, come on.
Right. It's my last day.
But what about he and Trina?
Sorry. I'm going to say the same thing.
Okay.
I like them as a couple. Yeah. I think that was accidental. I think they found that after they brought Trina on, but those two just work so well. They're so prim and proper together.
Yeah.
Right. I love their dynamic.
And yeah, I like how she was like, we should make it more official. And he was like, are you asking me to marry you? He's like, I believe some people call it that.
Yeah. You know. And then they just held hands and gazed at each other.
Right. In a very logical way.
Yeah. Yes. You could see them sitting up reading books next to each other.
Yeah. On their little space tablets.
Right.
Elaine says, I'm happy he found love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. If they have leaned this much into, we thought he was going to die this episode, do we think Trina is going to get it sometime this season?
I'm going to guess no. I'm going to guess end of season wedding.
That makes sense.
That would be a big, nice event thing to be going on in the finale.
Yes.
Right. For the whole crew to be together and for them all to say their goodbyes to each other and the audience. Yeah.
Or like, you know, Maul and Locke come crashing in and they're just Burnham's kicking people in the face, you know, while the cake is being brought out, that sort of thing.
Can I just say, oh, go ahead, Veronica.
So I was looking at, I'm sorry for the people who are listening, but there's an image from the premiere on the screen and it has like weird symbols in a circle around them and it looks like a Stargate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think those symbols mean? Are you decoding them while we're talking?
No, I would just notice it was like a Stargate. And I was like, maybe everything, when they put everything together, it's a wormhole. It's going to wormhole them to the other planet.
Maybe. I would like for there to be something at the end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another universe.
Now, they could also bring back Salome Jens. She may not want to do the makeup anymore. She's like 90 now, but they could pull like an Alex Krieg and have her voice the character with somebody else in makeup.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if we would see and or hear her this season.
I would love that.
I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know they didn't set out for this season to be the finale, like the last season when they started working on it. But I think it already has that feel to it, though. I mean, you got...
This,
and just in these two episodes, you've got Saru moving on. You've got Tilly has moved on. You've got Stamets talking about how, you know, they're not moving forward with the Spore Drive project, and he's worried about what his legacy is going to be, and et cetera. I think there's a lot of themes going on already that make it feel like the last season. I think that works.
I totally agree. I was really surprised by how much this felt like they were leading up to an ending that they didn't know that they were going to be leading up to, because when they filmed this, that wasn't the case.
Right.
Yeah.
And they, I know they did some reshoots, but I don't think they reshot like the beginning. I think they shot some stuff for the end.
Right. And that makes me wonder, is the last episode going to be an hour and 20 minutes or something? Because they had the full episode and then they tack on some goodbye stuff.
Could be.
I'd be okay with that. As long as I can get it watched in time for us to do a live show at 8 o'clock, I'll be. Okay. Matt says, they could have a season-long B story where Tilly keeps interrupting Saru and Trina every time they get a few minutes alone time.
Yeah, that could be. So it's maybe Tilly comes along on the honeymoon, that sort of thing.
Right. She just bumbles her way in.
Right.
Okay, since their names came up just a second ago, let's talk about Maul and Locke.
Okay.
Yeah.
How useless are they?
Super.
I just don't find them interesting in any way. I'm sorry.
They're kind of a space Bonnie and Clyde. I think they're...
I know, but...
I think they're fine as far as, I mean, you need somebody else to be out there after the stuff.
Sure.
So I think they work just fine. I mean, I like referring back to the chase. In the chase, you had the Cardassian ships and the Klingon ship, and then you didn't know until the end, also Romulan ships, because they're being secretive and following them around. But I would like for more powers to be involved than just these two running around. You know, I'd like for... what are the Orions doing? They name dropped the Tholians and the Breen. Yeah. And I mean, are we going to see Tholians or Breen? I think those would be two cool races to see on screen if we're going to see races on screen.
Absolutely. I just feel like this doesn't feel as epic as it should for this storyline. And, you know, because it's just Space Bonnie and Space Clyde, and I just don't find them interesting at all. Right. And there's no like, the only consequences to this thing are the ones that we have decided that there are. Mm. We assume that this thing is going to lead up to creation powers or whatever, but we don't know yet. And it just feels like the stakes aren't high.
Right.
Which, I mean, in a way, that's okay, because the stakes have been so effing high every season on Discovery that this at least is a little more fun, you know? Mm-hmm. Sure. But I want it to ramp up some. I need it to go somewhere from here to where it feels like it's super important that we find this before somebody else does.
Yeah. Like if the Tholians found out that that's why there's humanoids everywhere, and they're like, well, we need to grab that and make it Tholianoids everywhere instead of humanoids. And then that's that raises the stake. And like, you know, because the Tholians presumably were not seeded by the progenitors, I would guess. Yeah. And the Breen, we still don't know what's inside the suit. Maybe they are something weird. Maybe those are two races or the Gorn. I mean, they've got Gorn puppets already. Bring the Gorn, and maybe the Gorn want to have Gorns everywhere instead of humanoids.
Dude, you just made Keith had an aneurysm, because he's like, no, not more Gorn. More Gorn.
The Gorn and Captain Kirk are going to show up at the end of the season just for Keith.
Oh, God, that's funny.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think that we could use higher stakes. Right now, we've just had sort of an introduction to it. We've only got 8 episodes left, though. There's only a 10 episode season this year, so
I know.
Hope they maintain this pace. We've had some trouble with the pacing in the past on Discovery, where they would kind of, the back half of the season would kind of drag and then kind of rush through the end. So hopefully, knowing they have 10 episodes, hopefully it's all tight.
Yeah. And you know, earlier this year, I've mentioned on the show already once that I had watched season 4. Getting ready for season 5, and I hadn't gone back and rewatched a full season of Discovery before this, because I've got so much stuff to do and so much stuff to watch. But I really wanted to revisit season 4, and I found that I enjoyed season 4 so much more watching it in quicker succession than I did week on week, you know, because when you end up with a middle chapter and it's, you know, 7 days after the last one and 7 days until the next one, it feels like it's bogged down. But then when I watched the whole thing at one time, it didn't feel that way at all. So I'm trying to go in to season 5 with that mentality. Even if I still am seeing it one per week, I'm trying to keep the whole storyline in my head and not worry about an episode that maybe feels slow, you know, when it's isolated from the ones around it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I've said that on the show before, too. I think season 4 works better as a binge, because things like the Lorca storyline that took almost 2 months in real life, like 8 weeks of 7 weeks of watching, you can get right through it. You know, you're not spending them watching them 7 episodes chasing this dude around or him chasing them and back and forth, you know?
Right. And I got to say how much I loved watching season 4 again.
Yeah,
I liked it when it aired, but I loved it when I rewatched it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, Matt says, could they find a way to travel back to 23rd century from this and at the end of the season?
They could.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're writers. They can come up with anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I that's not what I wouldn't prefer for them to do that.
No.
I like that they sort of made their home in the 32nd century, and that's sort of where they're at. If they were to end Discovery on something like that, I would really rather they, like, some big thing happens at the end and they have to, like, jump into another universe or something, and you just end with them like flying off into a new thing. I think that'd be kind of fun, but I wouldn't want them to show back up at Pike's time, and then you've got the Discovery characters all running around at Pike's time with 32nd century knowledge.
No.
Right. Yeah.
And then you have to worry about, is that timeline even, is that even the future? You know, if they all come back in time and change the history, is that all useless now, you know?
Yeah, true. Okay, so who are some characters that we haven't talked about yet? Oh, so the relationship between Burnham and Book, now that they are reunited, and it feels so good.
They're not, though, are they?
I know.
Exactly. Yeah, they're sort of, they're exes, which, I mean, like when Cassidy Yates came back on DS9, they just sort of picked up their relationship again.
Yeah.
Where something like Book and Burnham, at least for now, that's in the past for them, which I think gives them an interesting dynamic. I like that he's out there like working on, he's not like in a penal colony, because I hate when Star Trek has penal colonies. I like that he's out there, like they're making him basically do community service. Like he's doing good to make up for what he did. And so and he does have relevant experience. I can see why they would want to get him back, because they're chasing these two criminals, and he's very just in this episode, he's like, oh, they went to this planet. That's where I would go.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And also it kind of was bittersweet when he was talking about watching just how Maul and Locke are flying their ship, like they're in love, they're free, they're having a great, because that was him and Michael like 2 years ago, back when they were running and gunning and just like these two people are basically like he and Michael were just a couple of years ago. Which I thought that was poignant. I thought that worked. You didn't care for it.
Here's what didn't work for me personally. It's another discovery-ism.
Yeah.
They beam down to the desert planet and they're on their undercover mission to go into the desert village. And the first thing they do is talk about their relationship until Captain Weird Ears comes along and says, hey, excuse me, we got a mission to do. And I'm like, thank you. Have that discussion on your own time. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's also very Discovery-ish that like the person they're chasing has some relationship to Book, like where
the Cleveland
Booker that was his mentor. This is his daughter, and I recognized her. She's the only one with that visible birthmark on her face, you know.
Right.
Which it's a bit small universe syndrome.
Right. Right.
But I do like the idea of him, after what he went through last year, of having the thought that he's got some kind of family connection back, because everyone he knows was wiped out on that planet. So I think part works. It just, the person you bump into first in the episode is going to be that person, of course. It's the one that you're chasing.
That is a good point. And I honestly didn't think about that. Mm. When he had Zora de-age the image of that girl, and
Her hair changed.
And we saw what she looked like at 7 years and 3 months. And I thought, oh, my God. To me, it looked like that boy that was killed on Quajon. And I thought, oh, God, now he's going to mope about that again.
Right.
I didn't think of it as being somebody that he had met before until he, you know, said it.
Yeah.
So well, I didn't realize, Veronica, I didn't really know where they were going with that.
Right. To your point, Veronica, I think the computer could tell that wasn't her natural hair color. And so the age of 7 was what her natural hair color would have been. But I mean, it's convenient that he just bumps into this person and she happens to have a birthmark that he's going to recognize, etc. But I do like giving something to that character because that's meaningful. You know, like everyone he knows on this planet was wiped out and he's been dealing with that for a year or however long. Could have some at least distant connection to this person.
And, you know, it is nice that we get confirmation that the future still has peroxide. So, you know, Matt says they transport to the Kelvinverse. You just made Keith had another aneurysm. And he also says, I like penal colonies that have Iman.
Yeah, well, I don't mind a Klingon penal colony. I like for the Federation. I like when in the original series, when they only had like, they didn't have prisons anymore, and they had a few rehabilitation centers for the people who couldn't be rehabilitated, and they treated them as sick. They treated them like treatment centers. They didn't have like Federation prisons. Well, then you get to the Next Generation time frame, and they've just got Federation prisons where you're basically like crushing rocks in New Zealand. And, you know, I like that they've got they should have a more advanced prison system than we have in the 32nd century.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna talk about something else that bugged me.
Okay.
Okay. So episode one, you know, we've got everybody's there. You know, all the main cast, all the bridge crew, everybody's there. And it's Michelle Paradise. Michelle wrote it. Michelle Paradise tends to throw a bone to at least, if not the whole bridge crew, to somebody on the bridge crew. Michael is going off to do something with guns. And she's like, Rhys Owosakun, you're with me. And I'm like, hell yeah, there's Michelle Paradise. So they go off and they're doing their little skulky thing around the corners and they've got their guns out and everything. And then Michelle Paradise did me wrong. And all of a sudden, Owo and Rhys are like, oh, we're trapped in goo. I was like, that is the stupidest, most 70s Saturday morning cartoon nonsense I have ever seen. I was so pissed.
70s cartoon.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Oh, God, that just irritated the snot out of me. And then, of course, none of them ran episode two. So,
right. Well, here's something that bothered me. So you bring this android on board and you have the doctor and the xenomycologist start working on him. Like, is there there's no Geordi on this ship? Like, they ignore the fact that Stamets is not the engineer. He doesn't work in the engine room. We've never seen the engine room. He's not the engineer. He's the fungus expert. Why is him and the doctor working on this android? Right. You don't have any scientists or engineers on the ship.
Where's Reno when you need her?
Right. That's a good point. Where is Reno? Yeah. Or it would be like a science officer and an engineer on, but as it goes back to the structure of the show, the way it was set up, you don't have the traditional bridge. You don't have the traditional Starfleet roles.
Yeah.
I was looking at you, Veronica. Comments aren't. What's something that bothered you, Veronica?
Yeah, there's got to be something.
Nothing.
No. Nothing?
Just the ships coming in like that. I thought that was stupid. Okay. We already discussed that.
Right. Yeah. There's got to be something.
All right. Matt says, roles have never been well-defined on Discovery.
This is true.
They're very fluid.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't talked a whole lot about Stamets. He's... dealing with what his legacy is going to be. He even made a comment about how Alton Soong's name is still being spoken hundreds of years later because he's got a legacy. And he's like, what is my legacy? I invented this, spore drive that really only went to Discovery and then Bookship for a little bit. And then now it's going to be phased out because you can't. I think the problem comes down to the pilot. You got to have a pilot with he's got the tardigrade DNA and the tardigrades are basically extinct. And then Book's people had the ability, but their planet got blown up. And so the spore drive's being, it's obsolete technology. It's like a curiosity. It's not something that was ever as big as he thought it should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so weird, too, because I don't know. That's what they sort of hung their hat on for this whole time. And that's been one of the biggest sticking points for fans, especially when they were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting that that's part of the plot now. We're ditching the mushrooms.
Right. Well, I think that's part of having like five showrunners since that idea come up with,
That is very true.
And we've been lucky the last 3 years. We've had pretty consistent behind the scenes people.
Yeah.
But the first 2 years was a roller coaster. It was a revolving door of showrunners.
Yeah. And they even had a roller coaster on screen when they had the turbo lifts going through all the empty space in the ship.
Yes, thankfully we haven't had that this year.
Oh my God.
But it looks like we're off to Trill next week.
Yeah.
I was so excited with the idea that they were possibly going to Beta Zed.
That's what I said when we were watching. I was like, I want to go to Beta Zed.
Yeah. But I'm kind of happy about going to Trill.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping we'll see Gray on Trill.
No, great. We definitely will see Gray.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the whole point of this.
Yeah.
Also, we watched the clip on the Ready Room.
Oh, that's true.
And Gray is there.
Yeah. But also, I'm hoping that because when Adira was first introduced, they talked about how they were like, I'll be the ambassador for finding non-Trill hosts because the Trill are running out of hosts. Mm. And that has never been mentioned again on the show.
True. That's
so
true.
I would like for that to at least come up.
Yeah.
Somebody be like, hey, did you find any Trill hosts? And they're like, we've been pretty busy.
I do hope, and I didn't think about this until just now, but I do hope that last season we saw some of the upper level Trill people. And one of them, and I don't remember the actress's name, but she played Ronnie on Schitt's Creek.
Okay.
I hope we see her again just because I love Schitt's Creek so much.
Awesome.
Matt says, so if you don't invent something that stands the test of multiple centuries, your life wasn't worth it. That's my philosophy. Is Stamets the John DeLorean of his time?
I think when he found, the mycelial network and the ability that I think he thought that was going to be like the Wright brothers, like Zefram Cochrane, like he invented the next big thing and it's not.
Yeah. Right.
It's unfortunately it's got some practical limitations that make it not something you can't scale.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have somebody to fly these things.
Yeah.
Which I think works in the show for the storyline they've been telling for the last 4 years. I think that makes total sense because that's the limitation of the technology. But that's a lot of the, you know, non-warp technologies we've seen on Star Trek will have, like, you have to have this exotic element or it's very dangerous, or like there's a reason they keep going back to dilithium and warp drive all these times, mm-hmm. because it's reliable and it's,
yeah,
you know,
until it blows up in every ship. Right.
That's right.
Okay, so for the people who are watching, if there's anything that we haven't discussed yet and you want us to address, just drop it in the comments and we'll get it, because we're coming down to our last few minutes here. Yeah. So get it in quick.
Right, quick. We got 5 minutes left. I thought this was a fun week. I thought this was a fun premiere. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the season. I'm looking forward to this Indiana Jones adventure. Hopefully it's not a puzzle and a clue every week. They've got to shake it up a lot. They're going to be, you know, like build the storyline. I hope they get into the philosophy of it and things like that. And like you said, I hope they raise the stakes, because if it's just a different planet every week and a different puzzle box, then that's going to get old before we run out of episodes.
Indeed.
Indeed. Yeah. All right. So do y'all have any final thoughts and comments, or can you think of anything we didn't, or a character we didn't talk about yet?
I'm sure I will, but I think we covered it pretty well. It was a fun premiere. I'm glad they did two episodes, because I really like that temple one. I like Indiana Jonesy type stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. She did mention sending they're being more respectful than Indiana Jones would have been of the fact that it's a sacred place and a temple,
right?
And then at the end, she mentioned sending the dots down to fix the damage.
Yeah. Yes,
and I was like, well, won't the security system go after the dots? And if not, you should have sent the dots down first.
True.
So I don't know if the dot's about to get blown up or if that's just a plot hole.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see any new comments coming in. So,
okay. Well, Alan, where can people find more of you?
Well, how about cosmiccreative.com? cosmiccreative.com. I've got a couple of other podcasts, which include Doctor Who A to Z and Modern Musicology.
And how about us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com.
That's right. Or?
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
That's right. And do you have a closing for us this week?
Yes. Coach Lee, Stock Josh. Coach Lee, Stock Josh. Coach Lee, Stock Josh. Coach Lee, Stock Josh.
That's true. Because I didn't mention that tomorrow is First Contact Day.
Yes.
So that's why Veronica's singing Happy Birthday in Klingon, because tomorrow is her birthday.
Yes.
So happy early birthday, Veronica.
Yay!
And happy early First Contact Day to everyone out there in Star Trek land.
Yes.
So, and is Paramount doing anything special for it?
I don't know.
I haven't heard anything.
Nor I.
Paramount doesn't do marketing. Boop,
boop. Well.
Well, they did. They've done a lot of marketing in the last week because the show is premiering the day before First Contact Day. So I don't know. We'll see what happens tomorrow if they have anything special. Usually they'll have, you know, a video or something.
Yeah.
Right. One last thing. Did either of y'all watch Sonequa on? Yes. Whatever talk show she was on last night.
No.
Oh, last
me
night?
Me neither.
Yeah, I haven't seen neither. It yet. No, I will. But I want to.
Yeah, me too. I will watch it tonight. That's the beauty of recorded television. Anyway, all right. That's it for us, I guess.
All right. Everyone, we go live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, talking about, for the next several weeks, the newest Star Trek episode. We'll be talking about each Discovery episode as it comes out. And then after Discovery, we'll go back to talking the legacy Star Trek topics. So join us Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on YouTube or Facebook.
Everybody, have a great night. Keep on trekking and enjoy the last season of Discovery.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun in our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.